R915 on your mobile phone.
And of course, State of Things, one of the original productions we do here at the WUNC studios. Another original production and a favorite that's been on for 30 years is Back Porch Music. And if you'd love to call in that $120 pledge, we'd be happy to send you the newest edition, Volume 9, Back Porch Music CD. It's a WUNC exclusive, and we're happy to send it to you as a thank you gift for supporting the station. 1-800-962-WUNC.
*915 on the mobile phone. Don't forget, if you call right now, you'll get your name entered into a drawing to win a trip for two to Costa Rica. That's right. Everyone who calls right now will get their name entered into a drawing to win a trip for two to Costa Rica. Call now. Be the next entrant at 1-800-962-9862. Of course, no pledge is necessary to enter this drawing, but when you make that call, consider supporting the State of Things and North Carolina Public Radio with your pledge.
From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Every campus has one or two, whether it's Straight D. Duran or Smiling F. Jackson. Across the country, college students know who among their professors has a reputation for being an easy A and who will happily hand out failing grades. And these days, if they're not sure about the professor's reputation, they just go online and check it out. Websites like pickaprof.com offer comprehensive rundowns on the number of A's and F's that a college professor has issued in the past. Given the wide variety of grading practices across departments and among professors, many campuses have questioned the value of averaging grades as a measure of a student's performance. Recently, the debate has taken central stage at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where a faculty committee has proposed using a new evaluation scale called the Achievement Index. At the very least, the new measurement would be used to determine which students were awarded undergraduate degrees with distinction or highest distinction. But the debate over GPA gets bigger, and questions about meaning of grades, the love of learning, and the art of teaching in an ivory tower grow with it. Two UNC Chapel Hill professors join me now to discuss practical and philosophical merits of grade point average and its alternatives. Peter Gordon's with me in the studio. He's a psychology professor and director of the program in cognitive science and chair of the faculty committee on grading. Peter Gordon, welcome.
Thank you very much. Very happy to be here.
Howard Aldrich joins us from our studio in Chapel Hill. He's a professor and chair of the sociology department, as well as an adjunct professor of management in the Kenan-Flagler Business School. Howard Aldrich, welcome.
Thank you.
We're taking calls this hour. Carefully now, listen, it's 877-962-9862. So if you want to join the conversation, and we encourage you to do so at 877-962-9862. Otherwise, you can reach the fundraising department, which we would be happy for you to do, but not during the discussion. 877-962-9862. You can send us an email, sot@wunc.org. Peter Gordon, let me start with you. The Achievement Index, what is it?
The Achievement Index is a method for statistically adjusting a student's GPA so that it reflects not only what the student, well, so it removes the contribution of the different grading practices and the different courses that the student took. And it's an attempt to get a measure of the student's accomplishment independent of those factors, which differ greatly across different courses.
And of course, this conversation, debate, and dispute over what grades mean and how they differ has been going on for a long time. Tell us about how the Education Policy Committee at UNC Chapel Hill came to this, how this discussion began.
Well, the show played a critical part in that. So some years back in 2000, there was the Educational Policy Committee did a report on grading that in the opinion of the authors, identified some serious problems. There was a lot of discussion following that, and then the Educational Policy Committee was charged with looking at this every year. I came on that committee a few years later. I looked at things. They seemed to be around the same. I started looking at the literature, and I found the Achievement Index, which had been developed by Valen Johnson, a statistician who was then at Duke. Mm-hmm. It was proposed and rejected at Duke in, I think, 97. And I found his work utterly fascinating. I found it to be the one approach to this problem that, in my mind, preserved the very best things about a university education while still dealing with the grading issue. So right. What it preserved was the instruction, the determination of course content and evaluation by professors without imposing a common standard on them, and then recovering the information about the students taking out what the professors did. Anyway, I appeared on this show, and Valen was the other guest, and I've worked with him on this since.
Always leading in the vanguard of change here on the State of Things. Well, we're happy to be a part of that, but now this discussion has led to quite a bit of debate. We should give us a sense very briefly about how it works. Let me try to summarize, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but essentially a student, first of all, you're not going to do away with GPA. So that's going to, there will be in parallel a GPA, but there's going to be another number along with that that will reflect how the student did with respect to fellow students in that class, and then how those students did in other classes as well, as a way of measuring perhaps the degree of difficulty of other courses. And that's part of this other new number. So, Howard Aldrich, let me ask you how you feel about that. And you know, I understand that you're a critic of this plan. What's wrong with it?
Well, I think the calculations that Peter's described are unimpeachable. I mean, what he described can be done. The larger issue really is thinking about this in terms of teaching and learning, and how this relates to the overall system at Carolina of teaching and learning. The concern that I have and other critics have of this is that it really picks one of two possible ways of thinking about grading standards. If you think about grades either being based on a criterion reference system or a norm reference system, with the criterion reference system being one in which professors have picked some things that students need to learn in order to master the material, and students can achieve whatever grade the professor determines from that mastery. The other system, the norm reference system, assigns grades based on your relative standing with other students. And this system that the committee is proposing really implicitly endorses the norm reference system. That is, a system in which the grading policies and procedures are used to sort students. In fact, what's curious about this, it doesn't really address the inflation issue. It leaves the system now in place as it is. It doesn't really get to the heart of the issue, which is how are faculty actually determining in their classes how well students have done. It simply says, let's take whatever system faculty are using and go from that point on. And so I think that's the most important issue, is that they've implicitly endorsed a norm reference system, the consequence of which is to exacerbate the already pretty sizable grade orientation our students have.
I'm going to break in just for a second to give Peter Gordon a quick chance to respond. Norm-based means more or less grading on a curve. How would you respond to that, Peter?
Well, I think that one aspect of the approach we've taken is to recognize that grades have multiple purposes. And in particular, if you have someone looking at a transcript who really knows what a course is about, then they can understand what's being mastered. When you have recruiters coming on campus just asking for a GPA, just using a cutoff to say screen who they'll talk to, when you have scholarship providers forcing students to maintain a minimum GPA to keep their scholarships, then that system induces students to focus on grades because they know there are real consequences to their grades, and they may pick courses accordingly. So we see it in the opposite way. This allows students to focus on learning rather than grades.
All right, there it is, the nut of the debate. We will pursue this in detail when our program continues on the State of Things, talking today about how grades and grade point averages are used at UNC Chapel Hill with Professors Peter Gordon and Howard Aldrich. We will take your phone calls at 877-962-9862. Just ahead, the intended and unintended consequences of the proposed Achievement Index on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us.
Thank you so very much for your support. 1-800-962-9862 or *915 on the mobile phone. Those are the numbers to call if you'd like to support conversations like the one that you're getting today on the State of Things with Frank Stacio. Hi, I'm David Brower with Regina Yeager. We're here supporting the Spring Fundraiser on this first day of the Spring Fund Drive by asking you to call at 1-800-962-9862 and pledge your support.
And thank you so much for pledging your support at 1-800-962-WUNC. Hundreds of your friends and neighbors have called in today, and hundreds more pledged online and sent in their donations prior to this campaign to help shorten it by 2 days. So thank you so much to everyone that's already pledged your support. Really appreciate it. Now is a great time to call, because when you make that phone call, you'll be entered into a drawing to win a week-long getaway to Costa Rica. So good luck to you when you make that phone call. Eric Hodge will be calling that lucky WUNC listener tomorrow.
1-800-962-9862, *915 on the mobile phone. If you're able to give at a slightly higher level, consider this treat from an old friend of the State of Things.
I got a postcard.
Tift Merritt, unplugged. One night only. It's a unique thank you.
This night of music from Tiff Merritt will be at Crook's Corner in Chapel Hill. Seating is limited, but you can reserve a place for you and a friend by making a pledge of $1,000 now to WUNC. Grammy-nominated Tiff Merritt and you, an evening to remember. And thanks for pledging now to WUNC for this special event.
I get in a good mood just thinking about.
We'd love to see you at that event. And I have to let you know that Tiff Merritt actually contacted us and said, you know what, I just love the station so much, I want to do something to support it. So it's going to be a real special evening at Crook's Corner, and we'd love to see you there. If you'd like to call in at the $75 level, we'd be happy to send you a North Carolina Public Radio WUNC mug. And thanks so much for Blend Coffee for donating that mug.
1-800-962-9862, the number to call to support programs like the State of Things that you get every weekday here on North Carolina Public Radio. Thank you so much if you've already called in or if you are one of the folks who helped shorten this fund drive. If you haven't made a pledge yet to Public Radio, let me tell you, it's a pretty simple and quick thing to do. It only takes a few moments out of your day when you make that call at 1-800-962-9862. We'll ask you a few simple questions, ask you how you'd like to pay for your pledge, whether it be a check on installments or on your Visa or MasterCard, and we'll ask you for a few comments about the radio station.
For a dollar a day, North Carolina Public Radio brings the world home to you. When you pledge $365 to WUNC, we'll say thank you with a tote bag full of WUNC goodies, CDs and DVDs from This American Life and Back Porch Music, and the New People's Pharmacy book, bringing the world home to you in a tote bag, all for your dollar a day pledge to WUNC. Thank you.
Everybody who calls in right now and gets their name entered into that drawing to win a trip for two to Costa Rica. That's right. WUNC is giving away a trip to Costa Rica. Beautiful vacation spot. If you'd like to throw your name into the hat as a possible winner, call now at 1-800-962-9862 and make a pledge to Public Radio at the same time.
Thank you so much for making the phones ring today and for pledging online at WUNC.org. WUNC is such a fortunate station because we're able to bring you shows like The State of Things, an entire hour focused on North Carolina. So lucky to be able to do this for you. And what a great host, Frank Stacio, call in support of The State of Things. David Brower, a member of the WUNC news team that produces so much of the coverage that you hear about North Carolina, all made possible with your support when you call 1-800-962-9862.
The State of Things is one of those shows where we get great opportunities to tap into some of the great intellectual and artistic resources that are alive and well here in North Carolina. And if you enjoy it on a daily basis, weekly basis, or however often you listen, consider making a pledge of support because it's your dollars, it's your pledge that helps keep the station alive and strong. Call now at 1-800-962-9862. Again, if you'd like to pledge at the $1,000 level, we've got a special treat, a dinner, and a concert with Tiff Merritt. If you'd like to pledge at the $75 level, as Regina mentioned, you can also get yourself a WUNC coffee cup. We thank you very much for your call.
You're listening to The State of Things here on North Carolina Public Radio WUNC. Support for the radio station comes from Jim Shaw Photography of Durham, creating gift memories for Mother's Day and Father's Day through custom portraiture of children and families. Information, jimshawphoto.com. We also thank Alltel, Singular, Verizon Wireless, and U.S. Cellular for supporting WUNC's fund drive. And we thank you when you call 1-800-962-9862. And a reminder, once again, anyone who calls now will be entered into that drawing to win a trip to Costa Rica, a week-long getaway. One lucky WUNC listener will win travel and accommodations, and it's our way of encouraging you to support the radio station. Call 1-800-962-9862. Now, no pledge is necessary to enter the Costa Rica trip drawing, but we do hope you'll choose to support the radio station, and we thank you very much for your help. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio, and we're talking today about a proposal to adopt a new student evaluation measure known as the Achievement Index on the campus of UNC Chapel Hill. Professor Peter Gordon is with me in the studio, a psychology professor, chair of the Faculty Committee on Grading. And Professor Howard Aldridge joins us from our studio in Chapel Hill. He's a professor and chair of the Sociology Department at UNC Chapel Hill. And Howard Aldridge, just before the break, we're talking about the the achievement index as a way to keep students from, I mean, you talked about grading on the curve, and it's, if it's not, you know, if it's not achievement-based, then how do we know they've really mastered this if we're simply comparing them to other students, grading on a curve? That was your part of the critique. Peter Gordon comes back and says, yeah, but if we have a grade-based system, how do we stop students from taking the easiest courses, the easiest A's, and going to, you know, online services to figure out, you know, the easy way through the system? So what about that?
Well, I think the burden of proof is on the EPC when they claim that,
yes, the
in
committee.
Fact...
You're talking about the committee.
Yeah. Yes. Because I've been teaching here for 25 years. I've been a curriculum head. I'm chair of a department now. I've advised lots of students. I've yet to, and I also know the people heading the Career Center, I've yet to hear recruiters complain about Carolina students and their GPAs. I've yet to hear some graduate school tell us that they can't assess our students' competence vis-a-vis other students' competence when they're choosing the people they want to admit to graduate school. I think there is just no evidence. I mean, Carolina students have run Rhodes Scholarships, Truman Scholarships. Our people are getting into great places, working for great employers. There is no evidence that anybody outside the university has had difficulty understanding what a Carolina degree means and what a grade point average means here. Carolina students are highly selected to begin with. This is an issue I wanted to bring up. We take less than a third of the students in state who apply, and already only a small fraction of the students do apply to us. We take less than 1/10 of out-of-state students. Carolina students are a highly selective group. We're talking about a system that'll try to differentiate within an already extremely selective group of people. And outsiders know this. The Carolina grade point average doesn't mean the same thing as East Overshoe Tech grade point average. And this proposal seems to imply that recruiters and outsiders can't tell the difference. And that's just not true.
Well,
it's not credible.
That's one side of the equation, it seems to me. We'll call that the consumer side. How does the employer or the grad school know what they're getting, the quality of the student, based on that number? But there is another part of this, I think, that was implicit in what Peter was saying earlier, and that is, how do we keep students from picking easy courses or taking the easy way through in order to get a good GPA? Because to them, it is important.
Well, again, I'd ask for the burden of proof. What surveys, what evidence is there that students actually do this? The students I talk to, my classes, the students come around to see me for advice, the students I meet in the pit or in the union or other places, don't talk about the system this way. Surely they do know there are courses where they can get easier grades or harder grades, but the students who pick their majors don't pick them on the basis of a short-term goal like this, and that would be incredibly irrational. The students pick their majors based upon a lot of guidance and counseling, based upon what their parents say to them, what they hear from their peers. No, this students aren't dumb. They actually use a lot of cues. One of the cues might well be grades, but that, I would say, from my experience, is a minor cue. And much more important is substantive interest, motivation, experience with a particular professor. Those are the things that really are guiding students moving through this system.
All right. Well, so Peter, what is the evidence?
Well, I have talked to many students about this too, and I want to agree with Howard that I have found much, much more to admire in our students than to be suspicious of, but I've had students tell me point blank that they pick courses using Pick a Prof. We don't have quantitative evidence on that, but this is a very large website and you have to pay money to use it. And if people weren't paying money to use it, why would it be putting all this effort into providing that service? I would say that that's a demonstration that interest in grade information is sufficient that a company is appearing to be very profitable providing it. Our university.
That's not a reason to spend to make a change like this. That's an anecdotal piece. I might even agree that there are some students who do that. But you're proposing a major change to make Carolina the only university among the 3,000 odd colleges and universities that would use such a system. That's a tremendous external change, and I question whether it should be based upon such flimsy evidence.
You've also used an example, Peter Gordon, and again, I think it's a narrow one, but you talk about Moorhead scholars who and others who depend on a GPA to get
this scholarship. GPA is used. I don't think anyone would defend GPA as a great measure of student performance, but it's used probably for historical reasons. This was a case that was brought to us of a student with a Moorhead scholarship wanting to be a major in math. The Moorhead Foundation, which provides very generous support to students, I think quite reasonably wants those students to do well. They have a 3.0 cutoff in any semester. If a student goes below 3.0, they lose their scholarship. And I've heard this case in detail of a student trying to get around taking two hard math courses in one semester because of fear of losing his scholarship. And I think that that's a situation where that's only one case, but that's a situation of direct harm where a great goal of providing opportunity turns out to constrict it because of the use of GPA.
But there is a...
Can I answer anecdote with anecdote?
Sure.
Yeah, we had two sons. Both of my sons, Stephen and Daniel, were Morehead Scholars at Carolina. I've known a lot of Morehead Scholars since then. I know Chuck Lovelace. I just went to the recent luncheon that recruited Morehead Scholars. It could well be that occasionally this happens, but my experience with the Morehead Scholars I have known very closely in a few cases is that, again, they're picking their curriculum choices and their choices of what to do in the summer and majors, those are substantively driven. I don't doubt that there might be one or two students like this, but again, the magnitude of change that's being proposed shouldn't be based upon anecdotes.
Well, let me put this a different way, because I think the argument can be taken from the point of view of that end user, those grad schools and those employers. If students are doing this, if they're only trying to choose the easiest courses, then it's likely that they're not going to be the best prospects. If they haven't really challenged themselves, taken the best courses, and come away with some real content and mastery of something worthwhile, then they're not going to be hireable. So frankly, if it didn't work on the... We'd soon see that UNC Chapel Hill would not be a desirable place for employers.
Well, a couple of things there. One is, I don't believe students are doing that entirely. I believe it plays some role in some decisions. I think that we have a system that allows that to happen is not good, but this is actually a very modest change. We're keeping everything in place and we're adding one additional measure. And to my mind, that would allow the student who did well on that additional measure to go to the employer and say, hey, I didn't get enough credit from GPA. It would allow the university to say to scholarship foundations, hey, we know you need an overall measure of student performance. We think GPA has some problems. Here's this other measure, and perhaps in these cases you should think about this.
Howard Aldridge, what about that? The fact that GPA isn't being overturned here, it's still available. It's just another measure, a second way to look at students.
Again, I have two responses. The first would be back to my earlier point about it exacerbating the already strong tendency among our students to be grade-oriented. And secondly, again, if this were cost-free, if tomorrow we could just push a button and this would be generated and we could do the comparisons ourselves, we would see this, but this is not a cost-free proposal. The implementation of this proposal is going to be quite costly. The university is spending $41 million with PeopleSoft to build its new enterprise resource computing operation. And we're buying a package from PeopleSoft that has a lot of standardized routines in it that calculate grade point average. As you might imagine, because this routine has to take account of transfer credits, about overseas courses, about a lot of different elements of the grading process or grade transmission process, it's not going to be a simple matter of just plugging in some external code into this enormous package. That's going to be quite costly. I've heard people talk about this could be in the tens of thousands, the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Every 18 months, that package is updated. So every 18 months, it would have to be done again. This is not cost-free, and I think that's the big problem here.
We'll get a quick response to that, and then I have another question, too, about whether it's being used anywhere else. But go ahead.
I think that faculty debate and setting a policy has traditionally been asked not to consider costs because we're not given budgets, and they were proposing that be considered at a next step. I think that... the notion, and I've heard some of these same numbers and no cost estimates really been done, the notion that it might cost on average $100,000 a year, given the budget of the instructional budget of the university, I do not see that as a large cost.
Well, again, in the end, the devil will be in the details, but cost aside, let's look at the philosophy for a moment. You say this was developed, the Achievement Index developed by a professor at Duke. We notice it's not being used at Duke. In fact, the system isn't being used anywhere else, is it?
No, it isn't. And I guess in response to that, I'd say that I don't believe that every good idea has already been put in practice. And I think that universities have been extraordinary in having faculty who are tremendous innovators in their own fields, that at an aggregate level, they are an incredibly stodgy, conservative kind of institution. and that they are also very decentralized, so that changing anything is very hard. And I think that to be a leader in providing this as a supplemental kind of information is a good thing.
Let's take a phone call now, 877-962-9862. Carol's on the line from Durham. Hello, Carol.
Hi, my name is Carol. I'm from Durham. And, this subject has interested me for many years, not only as a student, but as a faculty member and teacher myself. There are so many variant aspects regarding this evaluation process, from humanities versus scientific. The thought processes are different. The ways and means to evaluate students and their grasp of subject material is different. And what I've noticed that there is a push to make evaluation easier, to produce satisfactory results for faculty popularity, or to make it easier for students to be evaluated in terms of their recall and their ability to regurgitate. And this is problematic, I think.
Well, let's put that, I'll leave it right there, and I thank you for the observation, Carol, and Howard Aldridge. I'll ask you to respond to that first.
Well, it gets to the point I started my remarks with, which is that if the issue is grade inflation, if the issue is one of teaching, and I agree with Peter, actually, I think it is true. It's very difficult to change the university when it comes to things like what happens in the classroom. That's the last refuge of the autonomous professional. Right? We don't have people coming around into the classrooms observing what people do. We don't have people vetting exams. Department chairs have only limited power right now to do so. So it is difficult to change things. But again, let's figure out what the problem is. If the problem is grade inflation, it sounds like to me the issue would then be let's find out what the professors are actually doing. And the caller, Carol, was talking about pressures, for example, to make evaluation or assessments easier. Let's go see what kinds of exams are people using, true and false, multiple choice, essay questions. Are they using online testing? Are they using their TAs wisely? Or have they been trained in teaching? One of the things I'm sure Peter would agree with, I mean, he has a colleague, Joe Lohman, who's written an award-winning book on teaching, which actually discusses this issue I raised, the gradient orientation, learning orientation. Joe and I have talked about this. It's dreadful, really, that Carolina has not a program across all departments to help faculty get better in their teaching. Some departments now have programs for their graduate students, but we don't have a re-education policy for faculty. That, it seems to me, is where the Educational Policy Committee might want to go with this. And if they were to do that and to say that let's tackle the issue of teaching and learning at the level of where it's actually delivered, the faculty member, then I would say that's a good thing to do.
Peter Gordon?
Well, first, the term grade inflation only appears in the report in the title of referenced articles. I don't think that this is tackling grade inflation. That's not its intent. It's a tackling accurate measurement of student performance, comparative student performance, given that is done. And I think that the questions that you raise about pedagogy are real ones. And I think that those are ones that have to be addressed and are very important. I think that we are a policy committee. We cannot go and could not sensibly contribute to helping people in diverse departments figure out how to teach. We are setting a policy on how grades will be or information that will be provided about grades.
And but let me ask you, if that was the problem, though, if the problem was that teachers don't have a standard, that professors themselves, if they taught better, we would all be more confident about the grades they give because they had a better understanding of what it means to stand in front of a class and try to convey information and ideas. Isn't that a recommendation that a committee like yours could make? And again, without regard to implementation, we don't know how you're going to do it, but this is something that needs to be done. I mean, is that within your purview? Or could
well,
it
be? I mean, I think it could be, but then when Howard raised the issue of resources, I mean, we don't, as a committee, have a budget. What we've proposed would have some budgetary cost. We certainly don't have a budget for a training program for professors, which would be far more expensive. I think that that is the kind of thing we would hope department chairs would do. Oh. That's the kind of thing, because they know more about their classes.
Alas, we do have a budget, and that budget needs to be fed right now. And so we're going to offer our listeners a chance to enhance our budget. And I want to thank you, Peter Gordon, and Howard Aldridge for taking part in this conversation. Peter Gordon, professor and director of the program in cognitive science in the Department of Psychology at UNC Chapel Hill. Howard Aldridge, a professor and chair of the sociology department at the university. Thank you both for being with us.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Just ahead, veteran intelligence officer Ray McGovern visits the Triangle. Stay with us.